You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode and joining me for another week. You guys are listening to episode 38 of the Metal from the Inside podcast, and I know it has been a little bit since I've come on and uploaded a new podcast for you guys. If you do follow me on Twitter, I gave a little bit of an update as to why I stepped away just for a couple of weeks, and I really just needed some time to kind of reorganize and regroup. There were some other projects I was starting, and I was scheduling a bunch of interviews. I also do work a full-time job outside of the podcast and everything like that, and do some freelance gigs and stuff, and I was feeling a little overwhelmed, and I was kind of feeling like I wasn't putting out some of the best quality work because I was under the gun on some of it. Not that the past episodes I think were bad, I think they were great. I'm more talking about I was working on episodes that I wanted to share, and I didn't think that they were really up to par with what I wanted because I was so under the gun with some stuff. But I've, pardon my French, gotten my shit together, and now that my shit is together, we are back to our regularly scheduled programming, and we are back to weekly uploads, brand new interviews every single Friday, starting with this week's episode, episode 38. We have a returning member, or a returning interview E coming back on the podcast this week, Mr. David Ellefson of the band Megadeth. And joining him this time is a Metal from the Inside first timer, Jeff Scott Soto, who has worked in so many incredible groups over the course of his career, including and most notably Yngwie Malmsteen and some other great groups over the years as well. He's also involved with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and it was really great to have him on the podcast as well, especially with David to discuss their brand new project, the Ellefson Soto Project. They released their cover of Riot's Swords and Tequila not too long ago, about a month or so ago, and it's a fantastic cover featuring Swords' Rick Hughes, and it was really great to have David back on and to have Jeff on for the first time to discuss the single and to discuss everything that is in the works for Ellefson Soto, including a brand new record that is in the mixing and mastering stages when we spoke. So really looking forward to having you guys listen to this week's interview. And it was so great because I got to catch up with David, not only from the last time he was on the podcast, which was my first time really getting to meet David, but we've talked a little bit over the past couple of months, and he had actually helped me with my senior thesis, which we're going to rewind a little bit back to the fall. I was getting my Bachelor of Science degree in Music Business, Entrepreneurship, and Technology, which I finished back in December, but I had to do, you know, a big kind of like capstone project, you know, to kind of tie up the 4 years of school with a big bow. And of course, I did my thesis on hard rock and heavy metal, because what else would I focus on, you know, when it comes to music especially. So I did a really interesting thesis all about, you know, the rise and fall of heavy metal in the mainstream music industry and all of these different kind of sub themes within that kind of big main topic. And I interviewed some of my favorite people, and David was one of them. I also had the chance to speak with Rudy Sarzo, with Jeff Pilson, you know, of course, from Dokken, Foreigner, all that fun stuff. You know, obviously Rudy Sarzo needs no introduction either. You know, he played with Ozzy, he's with the Guess Who now, Whitesnake, all that fun stuff. And then I also had Kane Roberts participate, who he played with Alice Cooper back in 86 and 87, and he's done a ton of cool stuff too. So it was great because I hadn't seen or talked to David since then, and it was great because I got to inform him that I did in fact graduate and I got an A+ on my senior capstone. So that was really fun, and we talked a little bit about that in the beginning. So yeah, that was super great. It was so great to kind of catch up with David, and of course to meet Jeff for the first time, although it was virtually. I really loved their cover of Swords and Tequila, and it got a really great reception, and I told them in the conversation when I had had heard that this project was coming together, it was something that was kind of shocking, but also was so exciting. Not shocking in a bad way, but I just wasn't really expecting it. And that cover came out so great, again, of that classic Riot song, which we talked about, that album cover again on the Hudson Valley Squares the other night. It's one of those album covers that you just can never forget. And thank God people didn't really, you know, we don't really judge the songs on that record based on the album cover, because the songs on that record are fantastic. But the album cover, not so much. Johnny the Seal Man, Riot's mascot on the cover of Fire Down Under. But regardless, we talk a little bit about that in our interview as well. But yeah, it's just a great cover, and I'm really excited for everything that these guys have going on, which we get really in depth on, including the sound of the record, how these two teamed up with one another, how they got into working on this project, and especially why they picked the song Swords and Tequila as the first cover that they did and kind of the first taste of the Ellefson Soto project. So we get into a lot. It's a really fun conversation. I think you guys are going to enjoy this one and enjoy this return of weekly episodes and the podcast. And in other news, I haven't talked about this here on the podcast since I kind of confirmed this and announced it on my social media and everything like that, but I am now a contributing interviewer and writer for the hard rock and heavy metal publication Brave Words, which many of you, I'm sure, know Brave Words. They have been a mainstay in the hard rock and heavy metal world for so many years, for 25 years at this point. They used to be a print publication and then went on to be more of an internet publication. You know, once the industry and the journalism world kind of changed a little bit, we know how it goes. But they're now an internet publication and they're still as huge as ever. And I have been a Brave Words fan for so long. I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, more specifically when I was talking about my Jolyn Turner interview, because they had actually covered that back when that kind of blew up on Blabbermouth and a bunch of different sites and everything like that. But I have been a Brave Words fan for so long. When I was young, that was how I got all of my rock news. You know, I am only 21, so my days of becoming a rock fan, my early days of being a rock fan, are not too far behind me. But when I was younger, I would sit with my dad and we would scroll through. At the time, it was called Brave Words and Bloody Knuckles, as I'm sure many of you also know. But we would sit down and we would scroll through the site and we would get all of our rock news. And I remember, you know, reading articles about Alice Cooper there. And that was the site that my dad found out that Ronnie James Dio passed away. And we just got pretty much all of our news from there. That site was bookmarked on our home computer when I was younger. And it just has played such a big role for me. So I was blown away when I had the opportunity to have my Jolyn Turner interview shared there, but I have stumbled into a wonderful opportunity to be able to be a part of the Brave Words team and to be an interviewer and to also write reviews and articles and all that fun stuff for Brave Words, which is a pinch me moment, truly. I told Tim, which many of you guys know Metal Tim, who is the founder of Brave Words, along with Mr. Martin Popoff, who I've had on the podcast as well here before. But I was telling Tim, you know, it's a really big deal for me, and I'm just very excited to be a part of it. So I thought I would also announce that here. That is another place that you can keep up with me. Of course, the podcast is still a thing. I got that question a couple of times if I would still be doing the podcast, and I absolutely will be every single Friday. Nothing is changing here. That's just another place that you guys can keep up with me and get some more interviews, read some more reviews, all that fun stuff. Really, really excited though, and wanted to share that with you guys. And here is your reminder that Metal from the Inside merchandise is still available. We have Metal from the Inside merch available from the wonderful heavy metal label Season of Mist. You can go to www.season-of-mist.com and click on either the international shop or the US shop, wherever you are. Go ahead and type Metal from the Inside in the search bar, and our t-shirt with our flame logo should come up. And here you can purchase Metal from the Inside merchandise, whether it's a t-shirt, a long sleeve, a muscle tank just in time for summer. We have racer back tanks for my ladies, as well as a really cool women's back cut t-shirt, which is really awesome. We've got hoodies, cropped hoodies, zip ups, pretty much anything that you can think of, you can get your Metal from the Inside design on, and it is made to order just for you. So again, be sure to go to www.season-of-mist.com, type Metal from the Inside in the search bar, and that is how you are able to purchase your Metal from the Inside merchandise. The link is also available on all of Metal from the Inside's social media, so that is how you can find the merch link as well. And again, before we get into this week's interview, I do want to say a big thank you to all of you listening for all of your understanding the past couple of weeks while I took a break. It was much needed and I was really appreciated. I didn't get any, you know, negative anything from anyone about taking a couple weeks off. So, you know, it was needed and it's kind of just part of the creative process sometimes, needing to take a little bit of time, regroup, and usually that breeds even better content and gets kind of the creative juices flowing again, which is exactly what's happening with me. I feel more inspired than ever and I'm getting new interviews booked and just have a lot of ideas that I'm currently working on. So I really, really do thank all of you for your understanding in my short absence, and I hope that doesn't happen again for a very long time. There are no plans for another absence that long in the future. And again, like I said earlier, we are back to weekly episodes. Every single Friday, a brand new interview will be uploaded. Again, we are available on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Amazon, Google Podcasts, Anchor, all of that fun stuff. So that is where you can find the podcast. We are also on YouTube, so you can actually watch the podcasts, you know, the Zoom calls and all of that fun stuff. So in case you wanted to actually watch a visual component, that is how you can do so. And the great thing is that this time around, last time I spoke with David, it was just over the phone, so there was nothing visual at that time. But this time, the conversation with David and Jeff was actually over Zoom, so this time you actually get to watch the conversation, and that is uploaded on YouTube as well. So if you would like to watch the interview, that is where you can do so. Again, you just go to YouTube, type in Metal From The Inside, and we should be the first hit. So be sure to go ahead and subscribe so you never miss an interview over there. We have surpassed over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is so exciting, and I have high hopes that it's just going to continue to grow. So be a member of the Metal From The Inside family over on YouTube and go ahead and subscribe. All right, that is enough of me talking for almost 15 minutes here in the introduction. We're going to get right into my interview with the wonderful David Ellefson and Jeff Scott Soto, discussing the Ellefson Soto Project, their brand new cover of Riot's Swords and Tequila, and much more when we get back from this very short break. Stay tuned, and here is my interview with David Ellefson and Jeff Scott Soto. Yeah, well, I mean, I want to kind of get right into it because, I mean, sure, I've had David on the podcast way back in June of last year already, which is so unbelievable to me that it's been almost a year. But I've never had Jeff on the podcast or spoken to him, so it's nice to have you on as well. And when I heard that this collaboration was happening, it was really cool to hear because I know that you both have been doing a lot. You know, David, you've been working on Ellefson and the No Cover record. And I know you've been working with Wet, Jeff, and all that stuff, and Sons of Apollo. So I guess I'll start with you, Jeff, kind of just about how this collaboration happened, because it was unexpected, but unexpected in the best way. So maybe you could let us into kind of how this ended up coming to be.
Well, David and I have clearly known each other. We're more acquaintances from the past. You know, we basically met through our other buddy, Al Petrelli, who's a musical director at Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And David would come to the shows every year. You know, when we play in Arizona, he would come see us and come visit Al. And that's pretty much the extent of how much I knew David. Of course, we knew of each other from our different circumstances and careers through life. But it was just basically that was the initial meeting. And we always kind of had that natural kinship with each other. It's just, I knew just from talking to him, he's the kind of guy I would hang out with, the kind of guy I would be friends with, and possibly a musical connection. We didn't realize that until David called me last year and said, listen, I got this song. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I don't remember if that was the circumstance, but basically he hired me to sing on it. He threw me a couple bucks, said, if you could just knock this one out, you know, when you have a minute. And I did it right away. And I think that also kind of, he remembered how focused and how I, you know, he gave it to me and I gave it to him back right away. It wasn't one of these things where we work with many musicians and it could be 2 months later. It's like, hey, you think you can get on that thing I sent you? And we both kind of share the same work ethic. It was almost like the connection was immediately there. So you fast forward to another project we were potentially thinking of working on together. That kind of rested, kind of went to the side a little bit, but again, we connected on the work ethic side of things. David called me again and said, I got these tunes. I don't know what I'll use them for, whatever. And they just started building from there. From not realizing or thinking about what we might do with them, we decided, why don't we do something with them? And all of a sudden, there was a buzz created between the fact that we're working together, industry people that we know very well. No, they knew that we were doing this together. They wanted to hear it. And all of a sudden, the buzz grew and grew and grew. And That was the how we initially put out the Riot cover of Swords and Tequila. We wanted to actually capitalize on the fact that we're doing something together, but let's not give them what we're actually doing just yet. Let's kind of tease them with something that they're familiar with, our own rendition of something that's kind of a classic between the two of us, you know, in our lives and careers. And it's snowballing from there. We had the longest talk yesterday, just kind of catching up on everything. And it's just amazing how, like, neither of us expected this to actually snowball the way it's been going.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was the decision to cover Swords and Tequila? Because I know it's one of those songs that, you know, I know it very well, kind of the diehard hard rock fans, you know, really, really know that album, right? The worst album cover ever, but one of the greatest records, one of the greatest, most underrated records. So, I mean, what was the decision in covering that song specifically?
Well, it's exactly that. It's a classic song, it's a classic album. It started with David. I mean, we weren't really looking to cover or make covers. He's already done a covers album, but it's almost like, I wonder what that would sound like if we would take something that meant so much to us in our growing years and, you know, our early years of what we were doing and do our rendition of it, but kind of try to stay as true to the original, because you change it too much and people just start bitching about it. It's like, oh, why leave well enough alone? But I think our rendition was a really cool updated version while staying within the classic form of what that song stood for.
And I mean, David, I know that you've, you know, like we kind of just mentioned, you've been doing the kind of the cover stuff. And I know, like, right now you're working on Megadeth, so you're working on, like, original stuff. But for you, is this kind of cool to, you know, you did the covers album, you got to work on this cover. Is it sometimes nice to take a break from sometimes the original stuff and just play a song that you know, enjoy, that was kind of from your youth and getting into this music?
Totally. Well, first of all, you may be a recent college grad, but you are truly an old soul if you know that Riot album and how horrible the cover is and everything about it. It's like, wow, that was a quick deep dive right there. I'm impressed.
Yeah, we're both impressed.
You definitely got your heavy metal cred going right there. So, it is funny. It's, you know, these, like, it's Jeff and I were talking last night, you know, I wake up in the morning and just say a little prayer, kind of lead me where you need me, boss, you know, kind of thing. And some days riffs and melodies just fall out of the sky, like literally, you know what I mean? You pick up your guitar, or, you get on the phone or, and just an inspiration hits, you know, and Swords and Tequila was one of them. You know, look, there's a ton of these kind of Zoom Foursquare, you know, collaborative jams from this last year, because it's a way that we've been able to stay connected with each other and create and do some covers and things. I've only done really one of those that I did with Phil Demmel and Styx from Steel Panther and Russell Allen. And we did a Dokken cover, and that was Phil just called me and said, hey, you want to play bass? And I said, sure. And that's the only one that I've done. You know, Jeff and I think are more of the mindset of, if we can record master recordings, is kind of the, you know, it's the world we grew up in, making records, you know. And you know, and speaking to our friendship, you know, it's funny, my son Roman, you know, who's now 25, you know, I remember a couple of years ago we were driving down the streets going somewhere, and he was like, dad, listen to this Rising Force album. And, you know, and he was really into it, and talking, singing Jeff's praises, you know. And I said, well, we should go out and, you know, see TSO and you can meet Jeff, and you know what I mean. So it's funny, my son became Jeff's biggest fan in my house. You know, because, again, you know, an old soul himself, you know, doing music deep dives, you know. And so it's funny how these things come around. But I think both of us are working on a lot of stuff behind the scenes all the time. And, you know, it's like fishing. You just throw lines in the water, you know, and some days they bite, some days they don't, you know, and some days the one line you weren't even thinking was going to bite suddenly starts, you know, there's a freaking big old tuna hanging off the bunny, and you're like, whoa, reel that one in, you know. And that's kind of how this thing with music is these days, because, you know, Jeff's got TSO, I've got Megadeth, you know, we've got these big operations that we're part of. But in between, there's a lot of other time to create, and our, you know, kind of where we started our conversation today, that, you know, the COVID thing unknowingly, you know, put this big immediate timeout on all of us and a big pause on all of our plans. And suddenly, we all kind of found ourselves connecting to people that, had we not stopped for a minute and just been just stayed stopped and the world stopping around us, we probably would have not made these connections. And you're right, you know, my Ellison No cover record is one of those. We were thinking about doing an original album cover or original album, and we pivoted quickly and did covers. And those covers are all songs I grew up with. I mean, BTO and Sweet and, you know, these old things from back in the, you know, I grew up in the 70s. That was when I was a kid, is when I first got into music and started hearing that. You know, and then the 80s were kind of me and Jeff, it was sort of our turn up to bat to, you know, all right, kids, step up, show us what you got, you know. And then, you know, that's what, you know, kind of got our careers going. And, you know, so it's interesting all these years later that we're able to, you know, find these collaborations. I think we're in an interesting season for guys like Jeff and I, where you can tell there's a lot left in the tank. You know, I hit my friend KK Downing last year. I was going over to do some dates, and I wanted to do a book signing, and I hit him up and said, "Hey, can I do a book signing at your venue?" And I said, "Hey, you want to do a jam? You want to do something?" You know, it's kind of, and we were sitting next to each other at the same, doing it like a signing for some fans. And he goes, "All right, David, I think you always knew there's a little more left in the tank for me." You know, and I love KK. He's just one of the good guys, you know, and you know, despite his huge career in Judas Priest, you're a freaking guitar player till the day you leave the planet. You know, Jeff's a singer, I'm a bass player. We're all songwriters, and you know, and I think now finding this sort of kinship, you know, like this to just make music, and especially when it turns out to be really good. And it's you know, the worst thing to do is put a bunch of famous guys in a room and then try to make something, because I've been,
or expect something to happen.
And this thing, like what we did, where, you know, Jeff and I, the people we work with, we've all grown up together. You know, we were all famous people are all people who were once not famous, you know, and then did something and became famous. And we're lucky enough that that's what we've done. And I think probably the thing we enjoy about that is that we've got similar experiences, you know, and when I send Jeff something or he sends me something, we can go back and forth on tweaking things, and we don't take things personally, and we can rise to the occasion. And sometimes we don't have to say it to each other. We just know, we hear it back, go, yeah, you know, I need to fix that. And that's another level of sort of intuition where it's like, I can't believe that fucking guy came back to me and had me change this part. You know what I mean? Like, you know, look, we've all got egos. We all get married to our creative, you know, creations, you know, but it's, you know, there's just these really fun moments, and certainly this what Jeff and I are doing is one of them, where we just kind of let the thing happen, and it's, you know, at this age in my life, I want to make music I like with friends I like, you know, and that's kind of the long and the short of it for me.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, I mean, at this point in both of your careers, I mean, you've built both of your careers up high. You know, you don't really owe anybody anything when it comes to music specifically. But, you know, yeah, you're at the stage in your career now where you can pick who you want to play with. You can pick the kind of music that you want to do. You're not trying to please a record company all the time, per se. You know, and that must be kind of liberating in a way.
I mean, I think David is part of a musical history. You know, Megadeth is an iconic sound and genre. And of course, you know, he's part of that mold of that legacy, but there are other avenues that he might want to explore musically that don't fit with Megadeth. And I'm the same. I've always been one of those. And it's been a curse and a blessing at the same time, because it's hard for me to hone into one band and one group of musicians that I can feel complete with, which is why I'm kind of stepping to the different sidelines and putting different things together. I just want to feel completed as a musician, as a creative outlet. And something like this gives us both the chance to do something we normally wouldn't do with our day job, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it's, it especially now, we keep bringing it up, the fact that where we are in our careers and our lives at our age, whatever you want to call it, we can explore these things without damaging what we've already created. We've already created the legacy of where our careers sit and where our voices, where our, whatever you want to call it. But now we can take something and do something on the side that we love and believe in. And it still, it works just as well for us. Even if two people buy it, we love the creative outlet that we'd be able to create together.
Right. And I want to talk a little bit too about getting Rick Hughes in this as well, which of course, you know, from Sword, which was also really cool to see. And I know that you kind of, David, were influenced by Sword and kind of, you know, had a friendship and relationship with Rick kind of before this. So talk a little bit about getting him involved in this project and, you know, just bringing him on board.
I think it was our friend Mitch LaFon up in Canada, who's got a successful podcast and a journalist. He actually, I think, introduced Rick and Sword over to me and a record company that I have called with Combat Records. And we put out an album that they did. It was a master of, they were on tour with Motorhead, and it was ironically at Hammersmith Odeon in London. And this was from like, God, I think like 1986 or so. They had an album out called Metalized, which, you know, to those of us who were, you know, brought, who are fans of Sword, that's their record, you know, that's their Master of Puppets, their, you know, their Rust in Peace, whatever. That's their big record. And even back when we were on the P-Cells tour, we had a Canadian sound man from Montreal, and he's the one who introduced us initially to that record, and we used to drive around and listen to it. They had a great song called Stoned Again, which is very appropriate for those long drives in the motorhome on the P-Cells tour. And so we, you know, always loved the band. And so when Mitch introduced us, we put this record out, and it just, yeah, just kind of hit me and our guitar player, Andy Martingelli, were just chatting one day on text, and and the idea came, it's like, you know, let's have him, you know, throw a vocal on this, just is, because again, it's a cover, and like Jeff said, we're kind of tipping our hand that, hey, me and Jeff are doing some other stuff, but this is kind of a one-off of this thing right here. So, you know, as a sort of just kind of introduction to what we're doing, and being a cover song, it was kind of like, yeah, let's call all of our friends, come one, come all, let's have a big rock and roll party here, you know. So having Rick on it, Rick and Jeff have very two different sounding voices, which is, I think, great when you do collaborations like that. Unfortunately, as a bass player, you usually don't get to call your friends and have three bass players on a track. The instrument I chose, or I should say chose me, you know, it's usually that. Singers, guitar players, they get to have all their friends involved, you know. But yeah, it made for a lot of fun. Ironically, his band is Sword. The song is Swords and Tequila. That was just kind of an extra little, you know, pun, play on words there with that. But yeah, Rick was, he's a lovely guy. He's a wonderful man. And Sword is back out playing and performing. And, you know, so to just invite him to the party, he's so, such a gracious guy. He texts me every week. Oh my God, I can't believe, thank you for being, you know, I'm just so happy to be part of this. And so he's just and he's a great singer, and he's become a good friend now. So it's, you know, again, just another music we like with friends we like, you know.
Hey, David, on that last note that you brought up about you can't invite three other bass players, I'm going to suggest that we do a cover of Spinal Tap's Big Bottom. if I don't know if you're familiar, Sydney, if you're familiar with the song or the movie.
I am.
I'm sure she is, yeah.
the only instruments are like tom-toms and
right, bass, right.
Bass, solo, bass, everything, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, exactly. Or we write our own, you know, yeah. Yeah. Bigger bottom, you know.
That's so funny, yeah. Oh, man, just, yeah, three bass players on. I mean, you can do it. Nobody can tell you can't, right?
Hey, we're going to bring four in. That way it truly is a bigger bottom.
We're going to one up them.
One louder than them. One more bass.
Yeah, but I mean, for Jeff, it must be cool to get to collaborate with, you know, singers like that, which, I mean, I know that you get to do that on, you know, when you're with TSO and all that, but it must be fun, you know, to, you know, collaborate with somebody that you haven't before, because you didn't meet Rick Hughes prior to this.
Right. Correct? Yeah. And again, a lot of what we're doing, it's I keep giving, David's probably going to say, dude, you got to stop with all the compliments, but I'm giving David a lot of kudos because he is the visionary behind all of this. He's kind of the puppet master. He's the one that's brought all of us together, from Andy to me to Rick, and the ideas of doing certain songs. And, you know, he's basically the ringleader that's making all of this happen. And because it's working is a testament to his vision. And so I'll just keep giving him so many kudos and so much credit for this, because this is, you know, without his tenacity, none of this would happen. You know, I got to the point where I'm so slammed. I'm literally like juggling four albums at the same time simultaneously. And I'm like, I get to the point where, dude, I need a month or two, come back to me later. But I don't want to let David down, because I love his drive. I love his work ethic. So I'm like, I'm going to find a way to sneak this in and make sure that everything fits in. And I got my end done, but it's not a rushed end. It was, everything just organically happens. And I love the enthusiasm that I get from he and Andy in terms of when I turn in something. And yeah, there might be little tweaks here and there. Or I might hear something I want to change later. But for the most part, it's been such an organic process where I do something like, that's awesome. That's great. That's killer. And it inspires me. It drives me to want to do more. And I love how we kind of bounce off each other that way.
And so for this album, I know you mentioned earlier that, you know, there were some songs that were brought to you, Jeff, specifically, and the kind of started this collaboration. But where are we at right now in the recording process? Because, I mean, I know, like you just mentioned, I know, David, you're working on stuff as well. You know, you're working on other albums, you're working on other songs, and this is kind of a project that is, you know, out of, you know, passion and out of want to really do it. So I know that there's probably no kind of direct rush on getting it out immediately. But are you guys in the middle of recording, finishing writing, you know?
We're actually mixing 15 songs right now.
Oh, wow.
Five of them are done. Yeah.
Oh, so we're probably fast recording.
Oh, yeah. And it's like Jeff said, you know, you know, there's certain things that, you know, you sort of try to roll the rock up the hill, right? And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, a thing happens where the synergy is so good and it just takes off and has a life of its own. And this is very much one of those. I had a whole other record I was working on, and you know, and in addition, obviously Megadeth is hovering in the background, and that's working at its own tempo and pace and everything. But, you know, I had another record I was working on as well. And all of a sudden this thing just got wings and took off, and it's just like, you know, what life has taught me is, you know, our friend Al Petrelli, he always said, just say yes. You know, you might get overbooked, better to be overbooked than underbooked. So I do. That's what I followed his credo and just say yes to a lot of things. And I found it's, you know, rather than being black and white, you know, in the middle is where all the colors are. So it's a beautiful, colorful life. And it's more fun there, quite honestly. And this record that Jeff and I are doing, I mean, all of a sudden out of nowhere, it went from, you know, because we were originally going to actually pop out a little, an original track. And then we mixed two songs, an original track and Swords and Tequila. And all of a sudden we kind of went, wow, I don't know, this Swords and Tequila thing has got some pop to it. This has got a buzz. So we all agreed, yeah, let's do that one. So we pushed that out. And of course that lit up the airwaves. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, a manager friend called and an agent said, I'm in, and a record company's, standing at the door, you go, you know what I mean? So all of a sudden it's one of those things. You're like, wow. Like we were just sitting here, you know, writing some music. So again, we essentially have, again, these 15 tracks we're mixing, a manager, an agent, and a label all ready to like standing. It's basically at the starting line, ready to go. Yeah. And I think probably for us now, we're kind of going, wow, okay, where in our schedule do we put this? Because that's, you know, it's just some strategic stuff that you know, you figure out. But all of a sudden, it's like you kind of make a way when you thought there was no other way, you know? And that is a beautiful thing, because we've all walked around the music business with our tin cup, you know, hat in hand, begging for a record deal or asking, please listen to my demos, you know. I don't care how famous you are, you know what I mean? When you're walking in the door with a new record, you're starting at square one. You're all over. It's, you know what I mean? And they may take your call and let you in the door because you've got a past, but at the end of the day, your new record lives and dies on its own. And I mean, I've sat in Madison, you know, Times Square in New York, at, you know, big wig president offices, listening to records with people and just kind of, and in my own mind going, yeah, this isn't the one. I can tell in the room right now that this is not going to make the grade. You know what I mean? And that's a weird feeling. And we've sit with our friends who are in A&R and, you know, and walking in my house, it sounds great. And I get in the office in Burbank at Warner Brothers and I'm listening to it and I'm just going, yep, this isn't the one. It's not going to go the cut, you know? And I've showcased things, as I'm sure Jeff has, and you know, people were gracious enough to let you in the door to give you some time, but everything lives and dies on its own merit, you know. So the fact that Jeff and I have some songs here that are just stirring the pot and waking people up and getting people excited is a wonderful thing. Yeah. And that is, again, you know, again, lead me where you need me kind of thing. You know what I mean? It's like just kind of following those instincts. And you know, Jeff, thank you for your compliments, but again, it kind of comes from a divine inspiration, you know what I mean? It really is. It's just sort of like when the inspiration hits and you go, and You know, Jeff even said a couple weeks ago, Sydney, he said, he goes, listen, my calendar's cleared. I've got a couple weeks here. I can do it. And I mean, man, we really pressed the flesh, man. I mean, Jeff was grinding every day, putting new tracks back. I was writing lyrics. I go, oh my God, we got a song. We freaking need some lyrics. Oh my God. You know, but it was, what was fun about it is through the process, we found who, you know, what we were all good at, you know what I mean? It's like, we kind of knew like, man, if we throw this to Jeff, he's going to knock this out of the park. You know, all of a sudden just like, hey, don't sweat it. I got this one. I totally got the idea. It's in my head. You know, I'm sitting down to dinner and next thing you know, there's a freaking, you know, a track from Jeff on. I'm like, hold on, hold dinner. I got to listen to this track. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden we're wound up into another couple hours of, oh my God, this is great. So, you know, it's just fun to feel that excitement. That's that same excitement we had when we were teenagers and we were in our first band.
Yeah.
We were all trying to be Kiss or Aerosmith or whoever we our heroes going, man, let's, I want to be like them. And we, you know, let's jam and let's learn some songs. It's that same feeling. And I think, you know, that is the, that's ultimately what we're always going for. You know, it's, you know, you see behind us Platinum Records and those are all great and everything. But that's a byproduct of that feeling that we just long to have. And when you capture it and it lands in your life, you're like going, oh my God, this is awesome. And you kind of put other things to the side to follow. It's kind of like falling in love. You never expect it to happen. And one day it walks in the door and you're like, wow, okay. You know, you start rearranging your schedule around having the date, you know what I mean? And music is no different.
The crazy thing is we were just doing, you know, one song at a time with no real time frame or anything. And I couldn't believe it. At one point, David said, yeah, so I was kind of going over the songs. We have this, and we counted 15 songs. And I was like, where did that happen? Normally, when you're working on an album, you basically say, okay, we need 11, 12 songs. And you kind of just say, we'll do this kind of vibe, this way. You sequentially put the idea of an album together, whether there's a theme behind it or whether you know you need this amount of heavy stuff, this amount of mid-tempo stuff. With us, we were just churning them out and not even counting, there was no real purpose behind it. But after we stepped back, how do we have 15 songs already? When did that happen? And it was like an accidental, I don't even know how to put it. It was just one of these accidental purpose type of things.
It's like a rock and roll baker's dozen, you know, like, whoa, exactly. Where did this? Yeah.
And it's so cool to have that without, again, there was no real intent or rhyme or reason behind it. We were just doing it. And then all of a sudden we have more than enough to actually put an album out.
Yeah. Like I said, it's, you guys now have the freedom to, you know, you're not trying to make music to impress a label. You're not trying to appease, you know, this is the sophomore record after, you know what I mean? Right, like you guys have the ability to, have an album come out of wanting to just make an album. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which again, I go back to must be really, I mean, you guys have both experienced it with both, you know, many projects that you've been a part of the pressure of we have to make an album and, you know, there's not a lot, you know, here, I don't really feel like making this album, but there's a lot of pressure riding on this because I've heard, you know what I mean? And it must be nice to be able to, have a project that is solely because you really want to do it and you want to push other things aside so you can, you know, work on it. It must be nice.
Yeah. We've made a couple of those records. It's like, you're tired. You just came off the 18-month tour. It's like, let's get right back in the studio, open up the new fund. And it's like, what are we doing here? We don't have any songs or they're not done. We're tired. Fuck, it's Christmas. Shouldn't we be at home? Why are we doing this right? You know what I mean? And, you know, we have, and sometimes there's schedule things. It's like, listen, we've got these tour dates coming up in May. We got to get this record done. January, we got to start. And you're like, oh, I just needed some time to just chill, you know? And it's funny, when did we start this, Jeff? Like, I think the end of January, right? Wasn't it like around the...
Yeah, it was January. It was pretty... as far as the bulk of material came, it's literally months. It's
been about 2 months.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. And
the idea behind it was we were kind of like just kind of throwing a few things to each other and getting some things done. And I got to be honest with you. When David came to me, he goes, listen, I got another song. I can throw you a few bucks. And I said, you know what? You save the money. Let's just do the songs and we'll decide where it's going to go later. If you pitch it to another band or if you end up releasing it on an album, we can deal with the financial end later. Let's just create and see what we do with the actual material itself. And I'm glad I did that because from that, David was able to kind of process the idea that I just want to keep pumping out songs and see where it goes, as opposed to, well, this is starting to get pricey. If I have to keep hiring Jeff to sing on this stuff, it's going to seem more like a session for him, and it's just going to become kind of like a music library for me. But by not taking or putting any financial side wall between us, it turned into a creative side that it made me get into it a lot more than just, okay, I'm getting paid, I got to get this knocked out and get it out of the way. And I have many a session where I put 100% into anything, whether I'm getting paid or I hate it or whatever, I do it anyways. But for this, there was a different intent behind it, by the fact that there was no real money or financial gain between it. It was like, I want to make David stoked. I want to make Andy stoked at what we're creating here. So there's not that business side, the business arrangement side to kind of fuck with it, you know?
Yeah. And I'm curious too, you know, really quick, just about the overall sound of this record, which I know can sometimes be a little ambiguous, but I mean, I know that you guys both obviously have ties in hard rock and metal, so it's going to be focused, of course, you know, towards that. But, you know, how would you guys kind of describe what the vibe of this record is?
Well, I think there's an initial thing when people hear our two names, there's going to be an affiliation back to Megadeth and Rising Force for sure. Right. Cause that's, you know, from whence we came, you know what I mean? And, the die has been cast and, you know, and that's a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. So I think you will absolutely hear that, oh my God, this is exactly what I was hoping. Now, of course, with that, we've got all of Rainbow to Judas Priest to Deep Purple to, you know, in between, you know, that have come along and those things kind of make their way into our, you know, into our music as well. But at the same time, you know, Jeff just alluded to, you know, when we make these records, we kind of go, okay, we need some heavy, some fast, some mid-tempo, some slow. Should we have a ballad? You know what I mean? You kind of go about that. Yeah. We did not engineer this record on the outset of like, here's the 11 slots. We need to write these songs. Yeah. We just wrote. Let's just write and see where it goes. And while we're mixing now, we're sitting back and sizing it up. And it's just very nicely laying itself right out into a flow of an album. You know, when you think about an album, it's like a family photo album. You don't just put only the pictures of Disneyland. You know, you take the camping trip, the fishing trip. Oh, there's Junior's birthday. And oh, yeah, we went to Disney. You know, it's sort of an all-inclusive album of your life, of photos. And a record album is the same way. You know, songs are a story. So you want to put the story to tell kind of a bigger story, a sort of a narrative. And that's always the trick when you're putting an album together, an LP, a long play, is to take these little short vignettes and have them all make sense on their own and hopefully be part of a bigger narrative. And you know, again, Jeff and I grew up in that era of long play albums, just like the looks like hundreds you have behind you by your stereo. Yeah. You know, that's the world we grew up in. You know, obviously today, younger artists, obviously still make LPs, but it's, you know, it's a very singles oriented thing, which is fine. But you know, when we're, you know, our music and our fans, I think we like that. There's that thing about you bring home the CD or the vinyl and you slice it open and you open it and it smells the ink and the smell of the vinyl and you read the credits and the lines. And I think even when we're writing the lyrics, it's like we're already starting to frame, you know, what the lyrics are going to look like when we press them in the vinyl and, you know, into the CD package. And, you know, it's an experience. You know, to me, it's like when I go to the Apple store, you're not just buying a phone. It's like this experience. They got the store and the people and the customer service. It's like this whole, the box looks cool. It's like opening it. It's like the Monty Python with the Holy Grail. you know, and you know, that to me is what music is. It's this experience, you know, it's like it draws you into that world. So when you're either sitting at home or in your car, it takes you to a whole other place. You know, to me, that was the beauty of music as a kid, is it took me out of high school. It took me out of the doldrum. I grew up working on my father's farm. It took me away from the doldrum of these things. And it took me off to this fantasy land. And I think music, you know, I love that when I sit back and I listen to these mixes, it takes me there. I don't want to be half in the middle of something. To me, I hate being in the car talking and listening to music. Like my dad would always do that. I'd get in the car with my dad. He'd turn the music off because he wanted to talk. I'd get in the car with my mom, who was a musician. We wouldn't talk. We'd just turn the radio up and listen, you know? And I'm the same way. I don't want to, Jeff sends a mix and it's like, well, I'm going to be working on the computer. No, fuck that. Put all that crap aside, man. I want to go way down lose myself in the music. And I think the fun that we're the guys creating that stuff is just so awesome. You know, it's just like, it's like, this is like a dream come true. It's like, I can't believe we get to do this and we still get to do this.
You see, Sydney, you see why it's so easy to work with this guy? You just, everything he says is like, I agree. Oh, yeah. That's me. Yeah. It's kismet.
Yeah. Kismet. I totally agree about like just the physical copy thing. And I've had this conversation with many people who have come on the podcast because I'm just I'm an avid, like just physical copy person, as you can see. And, you know, it's one of those things that I feel like people specifically in my generation, which, I mean, if you want to listen to music however you want to, but, you know, it's kind of like you said, it's an experience sitting down and listening to the entire side of a record. You know, when you're listening to a record, I mean, you can drop the needle down on the song you want to hear, but you can never start at the beginning and it's, you know, it's whatever. And, you know, to be able to sit down and listen and have to flip the record and, you know, it's an immersive thing that I feel like, you know, nowadays when you can just pop on, you know, one
playlist,
song, song on Spotify and then, you know, it's playing on your Bluetooth speaker and you're doing a million other things, you know, it's, you're not fully, I don't think, appreciating, you know, the output. So I totally agree with that whole concept. And
you just said a word that I haven't heard in a long time, aside. Right, aside. I mean, it's like when you listen to vinyl, it is. It's aside. Yeah. You know, like it's funny. I was just downloading some Judas Priest records that I'm not that familiar with. Retribution and Angel Retribution, whatever they. That's how not familiar I am with them. Some stuff from the 2000s. I thought, you know, I should get familiar with these records. I'm just a Priest fan from the old days, and it's funny. I was looking at, you know, again, there's 15 songs plus three more bonus. And I'm kind of looking at it overwhelmed, like, how am I going to digest this? And it's just how iTunes, I buy all my stuff in iTunes. I pay for an Apple, you know, playlist, you know, Apple Radio thing, because I pay to buy music. I don't get expected for free. It's how my bills have been paid. So I support my friends, you know. But when I was buying it, I was like, oh my God, it's like almost overwhelming to digest 15 songs. So when you say aside, it's like, remember when we were making the first Megadeth records, me and Dave would go into the mastering lab with the mastering guy because they would actually cut the vinyl lacquer, right?
Right.
And, you know, we only had 8 songs. Like when we'd go and make a Megadeth record, like Peace Sells and So Far So Good Sweat, all those records in the 80s. And I was kind of like going, God, this, you know, first of all, we're recording every song we have, period. So there is no other option. It's not like we wrote 20, we wrote 8. This is what you get. And so this is what you get. But I remember the mastering guy going, you know, I love how you guys make records because, you know, you're leaving because the more songs you put on it, the closer the
grooves
get together and you start to lose low end is the first thing you go. So the mastering guy was like, man, your records, I'm really able to cut the nice wide groove, which gives a nice warm bottom end to the recording. So I was like, well, there's the good news about only having 8 songs when we go and record the B-Sells album.
But, and you should have gone with, we meant to do that.
Yeah, we meant to do that, exactly. Yeah, especially in this day and age when you have to deliver 11, 12 songs or even 15. Oh. I remember cutting a record, it was for Roadrunner, I think it was like the 13 record or something, and they wanted like 15 songs. I'm like, are we only getting paid for 11 here? Why are we giving you 15? You know what I mean? And it's this thing where, you know, labels just wanted content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, cause again, I get it. You need one for Walmart, one for Target. You need an extra one for Japan. You know, we know the game, we know what it is. But at the same time, you know, it's important for us that we give our best because at the end of the day, our names and our faces are on these records forever. You know, the people at the record company have come and gone. Hell, the record company may not even be around anymore, you know, but, you know, our faces as the artists and the creators, we're there forever and they hold us accountable, whether it's good, bad, or otherwise. And we've gotten our praises sung. We've also taken the bullets and the hits for the records that maybe weren't so good, you know?
Yeah. It's, and you know, two thing about like having like the different sides of the records, you know, and then you got like a double album. And when you got like a double album, it was like the coolest thing, right? Because it was like now you had 4 sides of music.
4 sides, yeah, exactly.
It's a 4 sides
and
music.
The fold out and
the gatefold and the inserts and like
and sometimes a poster.
The poster, right? Like I think of you know, Alice Cooper is like my favorite. I know you have a connection with him, David.
Yeah.
But you know, he has, you know, School's Out and Billion Dollar Babies with the big bill, and you know, even that interactive stuff I miss so much because it feel like it's such just a part of
Well, the imaging is really important. In fact, we were just having that conversation yesterday about imaging and stuff, because it is more than just buying the music. You know, it's a lifestyle. When people wear the t-shirt, this is Doyle's t-shirt for his, you know, this is him, you know what I mean? It's his energy drink, you know, but it's him. And when you wear the shirt, you're essentially, you know, you're, when you walk in a room, like you go to the bank or whatever, and you see some dude over there with his Slayer shirt. Well, I don't know if the Slayer guy goes to the bank or not, maybe he does, but but whatever it is, he's got his Iron Maiden shirt on, you know, and there's some metalhead over there, you know, and you can tell, you know what I mean? The guy that wears the Polo golf shirt, he's a tribe, you know, the guy that wears the Iron Maiden Megadeth shirt, he's a tribe, you know, and so that's, you can, you know, that's how we are. We sort of differentiate each other from that. And so, you know, that all that imaging is important. I bought a lot of records just from the album cover, you know, Van Halen One, AC/DC, If You Want Blood, Judas Priest, Unleashed in the East. I mean, I became lifelong fans of these bands just because of that one album I saw sitting in the.
Did you buy a Riot's album because of the album cover, or?
No, you know what? I did not. I was like, there's kind of a cute, cuddly little creature on the front here, you know. But it's like, is that a snow seal? What is that thing? But no, it's funny that one. You know, it's funny how that one came into my life was through, you know, this Castle Donington record, Monsters of Rock. You know, before, now they call it the Download Festival, but years ago it was called Monsters of Rock. It was a concert brand, and it was held at Castle Donington. I remember the drummer in my band, we were like 15, he walks in the door and goes, dude, check out this live album, it's this festival in England. And you know, that was a whole new concept to us here in America, because we didn't, you know, I guess we had Iowa Jam and California Jam and, you know,
yeah,
Texas Jam. We had, I guess, kind of festival brands here, but you know, it was like when stuff happened in Europe, it was like over there. It was bigger, you know, just felt more monumental. And so I remember Riot was on there. It was a different song that they had on the record, but that's how I came to know Riot. And right after that, you know, getting to know them. And I always said, they're kind of like the USA's representation during the new wave of British heavy metal, because the new wave of British heavy metal, again, because it came from England, it felt so much bigger, you know, and it's, you know, there's a funny story. I worked for Hartley Peavy, right, for a few years, ran his artist relations, and, you know, he took great pride in being from the South, you know, Mississippi, the Deep South. And he would always, when he would do these talks to his company, you know, he'd say, you know, God damn it, rock and roll is formed here in my backyard, you know, the Crossroads, right? It was right there in Mississippi, you know. But we gave it away to the English, and they sold it back to us in the form of the British invasion, you know. So he always had this kind of like, damn it, it was formed right here in my backyard, you know. And I was thinking about that, and it's true with us Americans. It's like, you know, when it comes from overseas, it has this extra, wow, it's, you know, this extra thing. You know, I think heavy metal, you know, Jeff got to sing with one of the pioneers with Yngwie, you know, I remember. Yeah. You know, when Mike Varney brought him over, and, you know, and that's right when I first moved to LA, I met Dave in 83, and I remember Yngwie, and then Rising Forest record came out. It's like, I mean, this stuff was like the holy grail of the next level of virtuoso guitar playing. I mean, Hollywood was filled with guys trying to sound like Eddie Van Halen, Steve Lukather, and Yngwie, you know, and Jeff, you know, like you talked about, he got to be part of that mold of that sound. And you know, as a singer, where the hell do you sing in this? There's a lot of notes going on. Where do you sing in and around this? And Megadeth's very similar. There's a lot of notes and a lot of riffs. And where do you put a melody in that? You know, so I always had great respect for Jeff, you know, being part of that and having an identifiable sound. And I think, look, it whether you're Kenny G, you're Jeff Scott Soto, you're, you know, Ellison, you're whoever, Yngwie, whatever, to have a sound that you're known for is an incredibly wonderful thing to have, because it's ultimately your passport to everything. You know, people hire you to sound like that guy. Sometimes they hire us to sound, just be generic and just do our job and, you know, sing or play the part. But it's a beautiful thing when people know you for a piece of work, you know, that's so iconic and held in such high regard, that just becomes, you know, it's attached to your name forever.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing that we both have that.
Yeah. Like the first thing I think of when you said that was like automatically like Eddie Van Halen. Like, I don't need you to tell me, you know, that's, you know, Eddie Van Halen. Like, you hear a note and you're like, that's Eddie, you know? And
right.
To have that is incredible. You know, he went, even like Alex Van Halen, I can hear his drumming and be like, yep, that's Alex Van Halen. You know, it's incredible to have. And like you said, I mean, you carry that with you in every single project.
Funny you mentioned that about drummers, right? Because there's only a few guys, Kenny Aronoff, Alex Van Halen. Like when you hear that snare drum, you only have to hear like one measure of it and you go, yeah, that's Alex Van Halen. Or like, oh, that's Aronoff, you know, just that crack to the snare. Because drummers are a difficult thing because of how you record drums, and it's a, you know, you can make drums sound so different, you know, but I mean, right. The personality, it's funny, they get signature snare drums. We get signature basses and guitars.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's like they get signature snare drums because that is their, how they hit that drum, which is the drum that's probably, that and the kick drum are probably hit the most out of a kit, you know, but it's like, it's funny you mentioned that because Alex is one of the most notorious sounding drummers, largely from that snare drum, you know, of on those recordings that we grew up with Van Halen. It's part of the sound just as much as Eddie is.
I remember even doing the first Yngwie out, the very first Yngwie album. And then eventually, like 2 months later, we did Marching Out. I mean, I joined Yngwie, and the weekend I was confirmed in his band, I was in the studio to do the only two vocal songs on that first album. But because that was already a work in progress way before I joined the band, they were already working on, and Yngwie was already writing stuff that would eventually become Marching Out. So we were already diving into that while we were mixing the first album. And so not even 2 months later, I'm singing the vocals on the Marching Out album. And I remember going, oh my God, I don't have an identifiable sound. I don't have, as soon as you hear one note from Steve Perry or Freddie Mercury, you know immediately that's them. And I feel, where am I going to find that voice that sounds like me? When you hear me, that one note or that one line, you know it's Jeff Scott Soto. And so all I was trying to do back then was choose my two favorite singers in metal at that time, which were Dio and Bruce Dickinson. I tried to combine what they did, and I was kind of impersonating them in what I was doing on Marching Out album, because I didn't feel I had a voice. And like, if I just sing the way I sing, it'll probably sound like, you know, a cross between the Bee Gees and Bobby Kimball from Toto, because I have a very soulful pop background. So I needed to emulate metal guys to actually get that identifiable metal voice. Yeah. And that's all I was doing on that. And so from that, I was starting to kind of form my own thing based on impersonating two other guys. And then I eventually found my niche of my kind of blueprint, or my thumbprint rather, of where my voice lies. But it's so funny because every time we talk about, you know, finding that identifiable sound or voice or whatever, I just remember that time so well. Like, even though it was 37 years ago, whatever it was, I just remember, oh my God, nobody's going to like me because I don't have an identifiable sound. And then obviously decades later, it's like, oh, as soon as I can hear Jeff Scott Soto singing background on something because he's got such an identifiable sound.
Yeah. I feel like that's how it is though with a lot of different bands. You know, you see like a band's like, or even, if you want to look at individual like instrumentalists or musicians or just bands, you know, you look at a band's first album and you can really kind of pinpoint their influences and you know, just song, you know, artists that they sound similar to. And by the second album, you can kind of see them, okay, like you can still pick out those influences, but like they are starting to get their own thing. And then, you know, by the third album, they're like, yeah, like this
it's honed, yeah.
This is us.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you say that, because it's like, I feel like it's definitely something that when you see an artist starting out, you can kind of see that evolution of finding their own sound. So,
and it's hearkening back to something David said earlier in terms of where we cut our cloth, you know, where we cut our teeth was Megadeth and Yngwie, and people will want to hear that influence. If they just want to naturally hear that we're actually identifying with that sound. And so I find myself going back to that style of singing on some things. I find myself kind of grasping that, where maybe I haven't used it in a while. I haven't really tried to sing that way or tried to even use that, utilize that. I'm finding myself going, that vibe will work for this. And yeah, it's a more mature and, I guess, experienced version of that. But it's cool to draw from that, because I do want people that originally found my voice and visually found my side of what they like about my voice to actually say, oh my God, I missed him singing that way. And it's the same thing with David. I'm sure people are going to expect to hear his kind of signature sound and what we're doing. We're not trying to do a Megadeth or Yngwie clash, but naturally they're going to say, if that's missing from there, they're going to go, well, that could just be any other bass player. They're going to want to know that that's David playing on the bass. Billy Sheehan's another bass player. You, as soon as you hear it, you know that's Billy because of his sound and his identity, his signature is on there. And that's, it's a beautiful thing when you finally have that to draw from, but then you can actually utilize it in some other things.
Yeah, naturally that also just comes out, you know? I mean, you've been working so long, singing a certain way and playing a certain way, that eventually it's just you. You don't even have to try to,
right.
I have to sound like David Ellison, or I have to sound like, you know, Jeff Scott Soto. It's just you, it's just how you write, it's just how you sing, you record, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, and through the years—
you sign your name.
Yeah, right.
Through the years, you try to expand on that. You try to challenge yourself to do and add more to your arsenal. So that way, if something like this comes along, you know you can add that side that you normally already didn't do, or that you got from somewhere else. And that's what TSO is another one that's really, I channeled different areas that I normally wouldn't have in my arsenal, but I got from TSO. So now I'm like, oh, I can use this kind of dramatic side to put into this. And there's a song that we have together that David put in parentheses in the lyric. He said, this will be like, if a preacher or if a street preacher or something like that would be in this part. So instead of just singing the part, I recorded it with kind of a different way of singing. And then I put some kind of weird megaphone distortion effect on it. And you hear the story come out on those lines, as opposed to me just singing it like I'm singing the rest of the song.
Yeah, it's so cool to hear. I'm really looking forward to hearing this record, because as soon as I saw this collaboration and I heard the first song, I was like, oh, I'm really looking forward to this, because it was unexpected in the best way. But I, you know, kind of like we talked about, that's been the kind of a pro of this weird time, is, you know, to have the unexpected kind of, you know, bring unexpected things. Perfect. Thank you guys so much. I know we stayed on here for quite a bit, but it was such a pleasure getting to finally meet you, David, and to have you on, Jeff. So thank you guys.
We like to talk.
Yes, we do. Yeah, never at a loss for words around here.
Well, I really, really, really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to hearing the record, and have a fantastic rest of your day, you guys.
Thank you, Sid.
Thanks so much. See ya.
Of course. See ya. You guys just finished listening to my interview with Mr. David Ellison and Mr. Jeff Scott Soto. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this conversation as much as I enjoyed being a part of it. It was really great to have David back on the podcast after almost a year, which is insane now that I really think about it. He was on the podcast for the first time back in June of 2020, so it's almost been a year, so it was time for him to come back on. And of course, it was great to have Jeff joining him this time and to discuss everything that they've been working on with this Ellison Soto project, including the brand new record and their Swords and Tequila cover. So I really hope you guys enjoyed listening to this. And as you can tell from the interview as well, you know, David and Jeff are just two of the nicest guys that you can just tell genuinely care about everything that they're doing and everything that they're working on. It's so nice to see just their genuine passion for what they're doing, which we talk a lot about in the interview that you just listened to as well. But they're just really, really great dudes, and they're so conversational and personable. And I think that that made the conversation even better. So I really hope you guys enjoyed listening to this. And if you really did love what you just heard, you can go ahead and donate to the Metal From The Inside podcast. You can go to www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside, click in the support button, and here you can donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. Or if you would like to get your very own Metal From The Inside merchandise, again, you can go to www.season-of-mist.com, click on the US or international shop, type Metal From The Inside in the search bar, and our merch will pop right up. Either one of those ways, going through Anchor or getting your own Metal From The Inside merchandise, are great ways to donate and support the podcast if you can. Every single dollar that I receive from either either of those avenues goes directly back into the podcast so I can continue to create even better content for you guys. But the podcast is available for 100% free, so no donation is required to listen. It is available on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, pretty much anywhere that you get your podcasts. So there is no donation required to listen. I would never do that to you guys. It is available for 100% free, but I always like to have the donation option there for those who might be interested. If you'd like to stay up to date with Metal from the Inside, the best place to do so is at Metal from the Inside's website, www.metalfromtheinside.com. We are also on Instagram at Metal from the Inside, on Twitter at MFTI Official, and you can like our official Facebook page. If you would like to stay up to date with me, Sydney Taylor, in real time, you can go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at S Taylor Official. Thank you guys so much again for being so understanding about my little absence here on the podcast, and of course for taking the time to listen to the interviews and every episode that I put out. It is so, so, so appreciated. And again, we're back onto our regular upload schedule. Every single Friday, a brand new interview will be live right here on the Metal from the Inside podcast. So stay tuned for that. Be sure to go ahead and take care of yourselves. Stay safe. Rock out to your favorite hard rock or heavy metal album for me. And we will be back 1 week from today for a brand new episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. See you next week and rock on.